Welcome to the CanMed Coffee Talk podcast, where we talk with the leading minds in cannabis science, medicine, cultivation, and safety testing. I am your host, Ben Amaralt. I'm the marketing manager at Medicinal Genomics and proud member of the team who puts on the CanMed conference. A few housekeeping items before we introduce this episode's guest. Check out canmedevents.com for all the latest information about the CanMed 24 Innovation and Investment Summit, happening this May in Marco Island, Florida. CanMed 24 is an all-inclusive event featuring world-class content, four-star accommodations, ample networking opportunities, and meals and drinks included. Be sure to sign up for email alerts at canmedevents.com so you don't miss any announcements leading up to this year's event. If you plan to join us in Florida, I encourage you to buy your tickets now. Space is limited this year and rooms are filling up. And if you can't join us this year, you can still stay connected with the CanMed community by following us on social media. We're on Instagram, Facebook, X, and LinkedIn. Just search for CanMed Events. And you can also enjoy free access to all the podcast archive episodes, as well as videos of all the past CanMed presentations in our CanMed video archive at canmedevents.com. This episode, we welcome back TJ Martin. TJ is the VP of R&D at Abstracts, a company that specializes in the research, development, and production of botanically derived and cannabis-inspired terpenes. TJ and his team recently published a paper that identified several non-terpenoid compounds that are responsible for the unique aromas associated with exotic varieties of cannabis, including the berry, tropical, candy, and fruity notes found in zittles and gelato, as well as the rich, intense chemical scents found in varieties like GMO. This research opens up a new world of aromatic compounds and challenges the idea of classifying cultivars based on terpenes alone. During our conversation, we discuss how cannabis aroma affects consumer and patient experience, the variety of aromas the cannabis plant can produce and how it compares to other plants. We define exotic cannabis varieties and compare them to more prototypical cultivars. We discuss why terpenes alone don't tell the entire aroma story in exotic cannabis varieties, how to communicate information about non-terpenoid compounds to consumers and patients in a meaningful way, and more. Before I get to my conversation with TJ, I'd like to thank this episode's sponsor, Agilent Technologies. Whether you manufacture or test cannabis, you face the challenge of delivering high-quality products, increasing sample volume, and meeting emergent regulations. Agilent offers best-in-class cannabis and hemp analysis solutions featuring robust instruments, software, services, and consumables. Their team of experts can develop, implement, and optimize methods to get you up and running quickly. Learn more at agilent.com. Okay, and without any further ado, please enjoy my conversation with TJ Martin. Good afternoon, TJ. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Ben. I appreciate it.
All right. I am excited to talk with you today about cannabis aroma. Some people love it, some people hate it, but it's an important part of the cannabis experience and a key differentiator between different cultivars. So you joined us on the podcast last year, link in the show description, and you also presented at CanMed 23, link in the show description, about the compounds responsible for the sometimes divisive, skunky, gassy aroma of certain cultivars. And now your team is back with another study looking into the sweet and savory smells of some cultivars. But before we get into that, I wanted to give you the chance to explain to the audience why aromas are so important to cannabis and why they're important to you and your team at Abstracts.
Yeah, so cannabis aromas really, they're really responsible for driving that consumer experience. So when consumers are purchasing, whether that be concentrates, vape pens, flower, pre-rolls, They're maybe buying these based on how they like how it smells and tastes, right? And to understand more about why it smells the way it does and tastes the way it does, we want to understand more about the chemistry behind these aromas. And the understanding of this research is really important to us as a company because we have an extraction facility. Obviously, we create flavor and terpene blends for various customers, but also just really we're curious to see, like, why does, I mean, we understand why OG smells skunky and gassy, but why now do GMOs smell garlicky and savory? Why do zittles and runts and all the other exotics, tangies, smell fruity, tropical, gassy oranges? Like, where are all these smells and aromas coming from? And can we start correlating the chemistry to the human sensory aspect? Because and as a company, when we start, we've been working on this for about 2-3 years now, before we published it. But really, it was around, like, I think November 2022, we started seeing regulatories, agencies come out with new regulations stating that cannabis was not fruity or sweet or savory, right? We've seen this in California. And this isn't anything malicious, right? This is just because there was no data and information showing that out in the marketplace. Testing labs couldn't really test for it. And there's no publications. And so we knew we had all this data in-house. We were working towards this publication. Like, hey, we really need to tell the story right and show people that, hey, there is more to the plant than we may understand at this time. That we know why it smells and tastes grapey, right? Why does GDP have that grape note? Why does Blackberry Kush have those dark berry notes? We understand the chemistries behind this. And this is important, powerful information, not only for regulators, people doing cultivation, genetic breeding, extraction, the whole gambit of the industry could benefit from this information, because then you can utilize this to better improve products and consumer experiences. And when you look at publications like Addie Ray and Ethan Russo's publication, they're looking at, and they show that the consumer experience, how good that experience is for the consumer, how positive it is, was correlated to how positive they perceive the aroma to be, right? So understanding more of this is going to help give better experiences to not only existing consumers, but new entry consumers coming into the industry who may be interested to try cannabis.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Addie Ray and her study there. She was a guest on the podcast. I'll put a link to that one too. People can really go down the rabbit hole. but yeah, that was really interesting where, yeah, she would have folks in the study smell different types of cannabis and rate how good they thought they smelled, and then actually consume it and kind of rate their experience, and saw a correlation where if you liked the way it smelled, you tended to like the experience, which was pretty powerful.
100%, right? I mean, it's just going to show that understanding more about why it smells and tastes the way it does is super important for whole wide ranging different product types and our understanding of this industry, and trying to, again, empower consumers to make more educated decisions and get better experience with the products, right? I mean, a lot of people who've been either in the industry or have consumed cannabis, a lot of people have bad experiences and bad stories, right? Maybe if we have more education and more understanding of what's going on, we can avoid those circumstances and those bad experiences.
Yeah, for sure. No, so I was interested, you mentioned regulators and sort of them talking about how cannabis isn't fruity or savory or anything. So was there something on the table or a push to sort of regulate cannabis products that are maybe too fruity? Like, I know, for example, here in Massachusetts with tobacco, you can't buy flavored tobacco. So was there a similar idea going on in cannabis with cannabis?
Yeah, in California, there was regulations in the regulated California cannabis market that are saying that if cannabis doesn't have, you can't add flavors to cannabis that are not natively present, right?
Okay.
Things like blueberry, blackberry, so dark berries, grapes, red berries, strawberries, a whole gambit of various fruits and sweet flavors that, and again, at the time, it wasn't done with any malintent, but rather the scientific knowledge just wasn't out there in the marketplace, right? And so when you're looking at making decisions on not flavoring a product because you, or whatever reason may be, you're looking at it from what, well, they're looking to say, hey, let's keep it smell and taste the way it does. And if you're coming at the context of what a testing lab tests for, or just the individual terpenes and gassy skunk aroma, like the classical prototypical cannabis, you're missing this whole realm of new exotic genetics that have been created over the past few decades, right? There's been a lot of genetic breeding work being done that have pushed the boundaries on cannabis cultivars to make them way more sweet and fruity, or way more savory and garlicky, and push those edges to see what else the plant's capable of producing.
Yeah. So it was really important to kind of establish at least a baseline for what the plant's able to produce, so that we sort of know, right?
100%, right? I mean, no way, like, again, the regulators can look at this type of work and see and understand, hey, there is more to this than just the basic terpene panel. But also, as an extractor, if you're trying to make a better extract and you're only looking at terpenes, those are hydrocarbon based. There's a whole lot of other more polar species, like the esters we discovered here, volatile sulfur compounds. These, if you understand more of the chemistry, you can start to change and adapt your extraction processes, your growing and curing processes if needed, or even your packaging scenarios, right? If you understand more about the volatiles and what's there, and you want to preserve something for a longer shelf life, if you're only measuring things like limonene and myrcene or beta-caryophyllene, you're not capturing these more volatile notes that consumers may be looking for, right? As we saw in AD Ray's study, there wasn't a correlation between the top three terpenes and their the consumer's preference of the experience, but rather just the preference of the overall aroma of the product. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's important. So I think most cannabis consumers by now are familiar with terpenes and mm-hmm. sort of the role that they play in the experience, the smells, and, you know, even the actual experience of consuming. But as you point out in the paper, that terpenes are only telling a small portion of the overall story. And that sort of some of these attempts to classify cultivars by their top terpenes weren't really working. So speak a little bit to that.
Yeah, so I mean, if you look at, within the study, we were trying to measure a broad variety of exotic cannabis cultivars, everything from as sweet and fruity as possible, get something that is dark berry, something that has tropical notes, something that has weird citrus notes like tangy, but also prototypical. And you can look at some of the exotics, and some may be tropical and others may be dark berry, and they have a lot of either limonene or one of these major three terpenes, but they don't smell the same. And when you go to the savory front, like GMO and other savory exotics, they also have similar top terpenes, but their overall aromas aren't anything close. Now, that doesn't mean that the terpenes don't impart any flavor and aroma at all. And it wasn't part of the research publication itself, but we did some studies in our lab just to see, well, what would happen if we stripped all the terpenes out and did just everything else, right? What's this going to smell and taste like? Pretty weird. Straight up, it didn't smell and taste like cannabis. It was unbalanced and had a very weird, nondescript experience. It was just very unpleasant. It's not until you have everything there that it has all the balance of what the plant intended, right? You have all the everything basically in working just harmoniously together to give it this full experience. Because if you strip out that core base of what makes cannabis unique, and even though limonene may not correlate to the exotic specific nature, it doesn't mean it has no impact to the flavor and aroma of cannabis that we all know and appreciate. And so having it all there is super important, but it's not the defining features of what makes it exotic. It's required to give it that full experience, but it doesn't help define that exotic note. A lot of that is coming from those esters, these other new compounds we discovered in this specific study.
Right. So it's almost like music where, you know, maybe your terpenes are your drum kit and your guitar and your bass guitar, but exactly. It's really sort of the, you know, synthesizers or the other sort of instruments that you're layering in on top of that, that makes it sort of a unique musical composition.
100%. It's exactly how we started to explain to a lot of the customers and our sales team we've been working with. When we try and bring this complex chemistry and bring it to layers down, the way to explain it is just like that, right? If you have a symphony and you strip out your string quartets, your strings, or your brass, you're still going to have music, but is it the same? No, right? It may be not like terpenes, they are absolutely needed, but they're not that the most only thing representative of all aroma, right? That would be, that's where, again, the study came in to show that, hey, terpenes, yes, they have importance and value, but there's more we haven't been considering as an industry that play a significant role that we should start looking at.
Yeah, and you mentioned it earlier that extraction techniques might be favoring certain compounds versus other ones. So how do you sort of dial that in to make sure that you're still capturing some of these minor compounds that that are contributing?
So, I mean, it's tough, right? It's, you have to have analytics with your extraction, but if you understand all the compounds that are there, if you want to dial in your extraction, you can test out different parameters and now look and see, is, say we're working on, say, GDP, very, very purple grape heavy type of smell and aroma, methylanthronylate. Like if in one extract you see methylanthronylate lower than it should be, or you want to increase it, well, you can change some parameters and monitor that specific compound to see, hey, are we capturing this more appropriately? And can we change our parameters to address this? And it's just, again, by having all this information, you can start to ask these questions on how do we improve processes to start better capturing or emphasizing these notes.
Excellent. So we talked about the terpenes, and now that there's these extra minor non-terpenoid volatile compounds. So speak a little bit about that. Like, are there different classes there? Are these compounds completely unique that haven't been found elsewhere, that are they unique to cannabis, or are you actually finding them in other plants?
So the majority of these, I mean, these are all like botanically, these are all found in other botanicals. So like, well, there's a lot of plants in the world, right? In things like blueberries, strawberries, other things like basil, these all produce terpenes for sure. They'll have some in there, right? But also other flavorants like aldehydes, esters, ketones that impart different notes that make each plant unique. And cannabis isn't the first plant to produce these, at least not that we've seen, but it does have a broad diversity of aromas, right? I've never picked up two basils and one smells like basil and one smells like a fruit. It's basil is basil, whereas cannabis has this weird broad range of different aromas that a lot of plants, at least from what we've measured, I'm not claiming to be the world's expert in all plants, but it does have this huge broad diversity in it. And so with this study, we did find a lot of these different esters. Again, they're known in nature. The only ones that we didn't see a lot in other recorded nature, a lot of what are the senecioates. These are what would be, if you're thinking in the context of cannabis, like what makes zittles different from a lot of other fruity cultivars. So it has that sweet, weird, uniquely zittles candy note to it. That in particular, I mean, it has a lot of those senecioates, which are a type of ester flavorant.
Okay. And now your typical cannabis testing lab, do they have the equipment available to be testing for these sort of things?
The most cannabis testing labs, they for sure have a GC, right? That's how they're doing a lot of their solvent testing. They may be doing some pesticide testing on there for the volatile pesticides. And most of them tend to have a GCMS single or triple quad. So in theory, they could test for some of these compounds. Do they have the methods built out for it? Probably not, just because there hasn't been a real need or even real demand, I should say, from the industry to test for these things. It wasn't until we came with this publication that even we start getting asked now more. We start hearing more conversations about esters, right? At first, it was the prenylated BSCs, like what makes cannabis smell skunky and gassy. Now it's, hey, we know more. Now what else can we test for and understand?
Right. And now, are there standards available for these?
Yeah, you can procure standards available for these, because a lot of these ingredients, like, for example, methylanthronylate, ethyl butyrate, ethyl isobalerate, these are ester compounds that are used for a lot of grapes and dark berry flavors. These are used in the traditional flavor industry. We have a knowledge of how to use them, and we have them on site because we have a traditional flavor house. Obviously, we work a lot with cannabis companies, too. We work with a lot on creating different flavors or products for, but we have all these in-house, and a lot of other companies do as well, and there do exist standards for a lot of them. Some of them, not so much, like the senecioates that are way more niche to cannabis and are more newly discovered, maybe not so much. But the others, I mean, there are companies who do produce them. But just because you have a standard doesn't mean you have the method to fully separate out the complexity of this cannabis, right? Cannabis produces sometimes hundreds of volatiles depending on which cultivar you're measuring.
So the paper mentions specifically exotic varieties of cannabis. How do you define exotic?
It's tough, right? Super broad term. When we first started this, we came into coming into the study, like I said, like 2-3 years ago, we looked at it from the context of, hey, we've written a case study on Jack Herer, like your typical hazes. We've wrote our paper on predominantly to BSC compounds for the skunky gassy notes in cannabis, but we weren't answering the questions on why a lot of cannabis smells sweet, fruity, tropical, citrusy, right? And not citrusy like a Jack, but citrusy in the context of like a weird tangy. And so we wanted to see, like, I mean, when we hear a lot of about exotic cannabis, at least in the California market, a lot of it tends to be very fruity and sweet. And so that's what we started measuring. We were pulling in also prototypical samples because you need to control. And we also procured samples of GMO because, I mean, GMO is a really weird one for sure. And also, if nothing else, it is super gassy. And it's almost basically the polar opposite of a fruity exotic. And so came in the context, well, like, let's measure these and see if we can start pulling correlations on the chemistry of what's happening here for these various notes, right? A lot of these studies, how we do these is we have our in-house sensory panel, various cannabis consumers who've been trained and have been consuming cannabis for years now, and we'll have them go through. On this study, we gave them guidance on questions. We gave them a lot of free form on what they could use. We didn't restrict them to any specific terms, and within reason, right? I mean, some people had some pretty out there terms. You want to bring it in at least in the right realm. But and we correlate that to the GC data to see, well, are there trends we're noticing? And remember, when we were going through the panel, Ian, who's the lead author on this with me, when he was running one of the panels with one of our other panelists, Steve, shout out to Steve, did a great job on this. We're going through GMO and, like, hey, we asked the panel, like, what do you guys think of GMO? Like, would you consider that exotic? Would you consider, like, a fruity exotic or a prototypical? And they're like, it's kind of neither, right? And if you think more about GMO, it's not true OG. It is a bit different from like a typical OG Kush or a Skywalker OG. And everybody was like, you know, it is more savory. Is there, maybe we need better terms to describe this? And so that's when we started looking into an understanding. Well, we know GMO was referenced as garlic, mushroom, onion, cookies, cannabis, right? As a cultivar. Maybe there's some chemical explanation for it. And we started looking more into the data. And that's how we discovered Skatol and Indole in cannabis, which are used. That's what's really driving those weird, unique aromas of GMO. Skatol is most commonly associated with feces, right? It gives feces that poop smell to it. And it just happens to also be in GMO and a lot of these weird savory exotics. Now, it's at a level it's such that it doesn't smell exactly like poop. It has its own weird non-fruity exotic, but more savory note to it.
So I understand when you say exotic, it's either sweet, savory, and then prototypical. Describe prototypical.
Prototypical is things like Jack Herers and Hazes, right? They have that citrusy, piney, terpenic note. Very quintessential, like sativa types, if you would frame it as such a sense. As well as OGs on the other prototypical spectrum, having that really woody, earthy, gassy, and some pine citrus notes to it. And more, even some other cultivars that have like the spicy notes, spicy herbal notes, right? Like either some things like hemp, which are very herbal, spicy, or even other things like Gorilla Glues that, again, these are all good cultivars. They're just not exotic, but they're very spicy, very earthy and herbaceous, and with some floral notes to it. So that's like your prototypical exotic may have those similar bases, but layered on top of it are those fruity esters or heterocycles like Indole and Skatol.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you that. And, you know, I think when I edit this, I'm going to put up the visual that you have in the paper that sort of shows a spectrum of all these different types of cannabis with different peaks for different aroma notes, because I think it's really great job you guys did putting this together. So is it fair to say that the prototypical ones might have fewer of these non-terpenoid volatile compounds? They're more sort of reliant on the terpenes, or no?
So in the context of like hazes and jackhair, for sure, right? It doesn't mean it's devoid of all esters and other compounds. They still have like hazes tend to have a lot of cherry propanol in there, which is it offers a mild, tiny amount of fruitiness because they have just a small amount of in there. But these are cultivars that have been around a while, and they were never really bred to have more exotic fruity notes, right? Like these are really classical strains that have been around a while that really own that specific flavor notes of, and they do derive a lot from terpenes. You're again, things like alpha pinene for pine, terpinolene for those terpenic notes, limonene others for some of those citrusy notes that are in combination with the other terpenes that are there. Now, other prototypicals like OGs, Gorilla Glues, they do have a skunky gassy note, so they do have prenylated VSCs that aren't terpenes. They do have a lot of terpenes there that give a lot of its base note, but it does have that really strong defining aroma that everybody, even non-cannabis consumers, know that skunky note or gassy note, depending on how you perceive it, that's coming from the prenylated sulfur compounds that are not terpenes.
Okay, so now you mentioned before that I want to make sure I got this right. You removed the terpenes and then smelled it, and it was sort of strange. Have you done the opposite, where you sort of eliminate these non-terpenoid compounds and leave just the terpenes? Or is that sort of obvious because we have isolated terpenes?
So we've done both, right? When we were
Yeah.
first on our paper, the prenylated VSCs, the gas paper, we on our sensory panel did some that were without prenylated sulfur compounds, so just terpenes, and some that had it. And it still has like that bassy cannabis terpene note that's there. It just feels incomplete. It feels like it is not a full profile. It doesn't have some of those defining features as a consumer that you would be looking for. So when we added the prenylated VSCs, it definitely got a lot closer. And so when we went into the exotic ones, when you add in more of those other flavorings, you're just getting closer and closer to that concept of like biomimicry, of getting really close to replicating that exact flavor and aroma of the plant, whether it's for creating a product or just improving your extraction. But when you do strip out like all those terpenes, it's because esters are really there for complexing that base out to give it that fruity nuance. When you consume cannabis, it doesn't taste like you're literally eating a strawberry. It definitely has strawberry notes to it, but it has other flavor notes of the terpenes that are there, or in some cases, the prenylated VSCs in the context of like some of the gassy strawberry cultivars. So if you remove out the gassy component and all the terpenes, it does taste weird. It doesn't taste like a real strawberry by any means or a real fruit, but it does taste like this just weird mixture of somewhat fruitiness, but just no defining features.
And now, so we mentioned before that obviously genetics plays a huge role in this, but is how the cannabis is grown, or how good the grower is, does that sort of contribute to how much of these sort of non-terpenoid compounds are going to be present?
I'm definitely not a cultivator by any means, but I would assume so. Yeah, like these, because the plant isn't just producing these automatically, right? These are secondary metabolites, meaning the plant is producing it for some biological reason. It also needs nutrients to grow and produce these compounds. So I'd imagine depending on what nutrients you feed it is going to impact the expression of some of these secondary metabolites. I imagine light potentially impacts it, right? How you cure it definitely impacts it. If you over dry something, a lot of these are really volatile. What makes it to the end consumer may not have it anymore because it got too dry or the packaging wasn't properly sealed. There's a whole variety of things that could impact, especially in the raw biomass, like the actual flower itself, if it has these by the time it makes it to the end consumer. And genetically, would love to know. I know from talking to Kevin over medicinal genomics, that's a really complicated question. There's a lot involved there, right?
Absolutely. Now, is there any potential for these compounds to maybe serve sort of a therapeutic function? I know that there's been thoughts about terpenes in the past, and there's been studies that sort of look into linking terpenes to certain therapeutic value. And, you know, the data is a little inconclusive, but I know that there's, with canflavins and other things, that there is some potential there. So could these also show some promise?
Anything is possible, right? I mean, do we know today if any of these compounds have a specific medical impact in the context of cannabis? And we don't know the definitive answer today, but it doesn't mean that they don't have an impact, and they possibly might, right? I mean, consumers are, if they're purchasing from a medical purpose, this is also what drives us publishing some of this data. If you're purchasing cannabis based on a medical ailment and you have your specific cultivar you know is what you need to help treat your ailment, then you would need, it's based on, I would imagine, some of these secondary metabolites, right? That's why you're choosing that specific cultivar, because that's what works for your body. On the market, a lot of THC content is, I mean, most cultivars are really high in THC. It doesn't normally typically change too much. Yes, you have some that are either CBD rich or have minors, but the broad majority of cannabis tends to be THC rich, right? The thing that tends to differentiate are sometimes some of the terpenes in the context of hazes versus some exotic or OGs, but also these are secondary metabolites. And who knows, right? We've seen publications from Day-Day-Miri that show some extracts have better anti-cancer properties than others. The THC and CBD may be the same, but everything else there is not. So what is causing those differences? Because the data shows there are differences. We may just not understand what exactly that is yet. And maybe they play in combination with THC. Maybe having the cannabinoids present with these various flavorants is what unlocks those medical benefits. There's a lot of questions to be asked and answered still. But now that we understand more about what's in the plant, we can at least start asking these questions and answering some of them.
Yeah. And now from a consumer perspective, do you think it'd be valuable to start reporting on different levels of these certain compounds, or would that be sort of too deep in the weeds? Or should we just smell it? And if it smells good, then we kind of let the nose do the analytics for us.
So, I mean, I'd say, two answers to that. One, definitely depends on the market, right? There are some markets where you can smell cannabis before you buy it, like Oregon.
Right.
It's deli style. You can smell anything you want before you buy it. California, we don't have that luxury anymore. It's all prepackaged. So you have no idea what it's going to smell or taste like before you buy it. You have to commit to buying that $30, $50, $100 product before you even know if you're even going to like it, right? And so we've asked ourselves this question for the past 3-4 years now, like, are these compounds meaningful to an end consumer? And I think it's tough. There's a lot of compounds in here we're a terpene flavor company. We understand, we should know more about this than everybody, but even internally, like if I was to go into a store and see all these flavorants on there, I mean, I might know just because I worked on this study, but a lot wouldn't, just because there's so many. That's what we've worked on, taking that complex data, because we have the GC data and the sensory data from these studies, and seeing if we can come up with more meaningful ways to simplify and deliver this information, more meaningful matter, like how exotic or how fruity is this cannabis cultivar on a 0 to 100, right? We know it has ethyl butyrate, methylanthronylate, 3-mercaptohexanol. If I put those on a bottle, the consumers are like, what is this?
Right.
What dangerous things are you giving me? Right. Cause it's just, it sounds scary. I'm a chemist, so it doesn't sound scary to me, but I'm not foolish enough to think that all consumers understand all these chemicals. But if you can put in a more meaningful factor, like how gassy is this? How fruity is this? How hazy is this? Like, and we've done this with some of the products we work on in California. It does have a at least a more simplified approach. And again, just looking at cannabis having hundreds of compounds and having on there, it has this many micrograms of this compound.
Right.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. It's going to be really tough if you, unless you were to deconvolute it in a more educated manner.
Yeah. And then, you know, layer on top of that, the way that they interact with each other to produce a different aroma too. Like there's no way that the average person would be able to figure that out.
I mean, I'd even argue unless you're like somebody who spent their career in flavor chemistry or flavor science or perfumes, really nobody would, because there's so many. Unless you are somebody who's constantly making products in flavors or perfumes, to just look at these long names with percentage, or it wouldn't even be percentage points, all these are PPM level.
Because it'd be tiny, it's tiny, right?
Yeah, exactly. And know that, hey, with having these 30 compounds in there, and also like think about yourself going to a dispensary, you're looking at maybe 10 to 20 different products by the time you make a purchasing decision. If you're looking at a sheet with 20, 30 different compounds on it across 20 different products, that's a lot of information to digest.
Yeah.
I mean, it would just be overwhelming to really most people. Or I just thinking about a new entry consumer, talk about something incredibly daunting, right? You're putting a pretty daunting task in front of them. Unless, and this again, it's what we've been working on inside my group, is how do we take that complex information, because we have all this data to support it, and put in something more digestible and more simple, so people can again go on there, hey, I want something fruity and exotic. Well, cool. That's what you like. Well, let's look at all these different, say, fruit factor scores or exotic scores.
Yeah.
Which one has the highest, or maybe you have a spectrum, which one has the certain flavor and aroma notes you're looking for.
Excellent. So winding down here, so what is it that you and the team at Abstracts are looking to do with this information?
I mean, first, obviously, we're using this to try and get our cannabis flavor products to have higher levels of biomimicry, getting closer to replicating that exact flavor and aroma of the plant. We want to use this information to improve our extraction processes, whether that be tackling cannabis or if we want to extract some other plant like hops. If we, now that we understand these compounds that are there, we have the GC methods, we understand the sensory behind it, can we use this to improve extracts? And lastly, I mean, taking all this data we've aggregated from our few studies now, can we come up with, and we have come up with some consumer facing metrics for cannabis cultivars that explain what something smells and tastes like before you purchase it? For markets like California, where you are reliant on a bud tender hoping they've consumed that product, they may not have, right? The dispensary has hundreds of products, but if we can provide education for consumers to make more educated decisions.
Excellent. All right. And before I let you go, I want to give you the chance to plug any additional resources that you think the audience might be interested in reading up on, and any websites, social media for you and Abstracts, please plug away.
Yeah. So if you want to read any of our publications, anytime we do a scientific peer review publication, we always make sure to put it up for open access. That way everybody in the industry can benefit from this work to improve their processes, products, or just better understand cannabis, because we all enjoy it and it's a lot of fun. On abstractstech.com, that's where we hold all our products. Under our science pages, we have not only the work I've talked about here, but some of the other case studies we've worked on. Worked on a couple case studies looking at what makes jack hair smell and taste the way it does. Looked at understanding when you do different extracts of what's the difference between flower, live resin, so a butane extraction, or live rosin of the same cultivar grown the same way. We just took that lot and split it up. We have case studies like that up on our website that, again, we publish these open. They're free for anybody to download and read. Just we find them interesting and hope everybody else does too.
That's awesome. And we definitely appreciate the fact that you guys do that, and that you guys continue to participate in CanMed. We're really excited to have you down in Marco Island again. And we'll see you there.
Sounds good. See you there, Ben. Appreciate the opportunity to present again at CanMed 2024.
Excellent. All hope you enjoyed my conversation with TJ Martin. Check out the links in the show description to learn more about the topics we discussed. And thanks again to this episode's sponsor, Agilent Technologies. Our next episode drops April 3rd. That's 2 weeks from today. In the meantime, go to canmedevents.com to check out all the details related to CanMed 24. Speakers, poster presenters, networking events, panels, workshops, meals, and more, all the information is there. While you're at canmedevents.com, sign up for email alerts so you don't miss any announcements before the event. If you are planning to join us in Florida this May, register for your ticket package now. Space is limited and tickets are going fast. I also invite you to follow us on social media. We are on LinkedIn, Instagram, X, and Facebook. Just search for CanMed Events. And lastly, please rate, review, and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. All right, that's it from us. Stay safe, stay healthy, and be sure to join us for the next CanMed Coffee Talk.